here's what you missed last time on Almost Entirely Sports.
We even have a couple of new things to unveil today. And, I don't know, roughly 60% of the technology behind the glass is not working. I think that's fair. You're going to want to check out the live stream on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page.
But not yet. You're not, because it's not working.
But it doesn't work currently. You're going to want to check out the podcasts later.
But right now we're not recording.
Uh-oh, smoke just started coming out of a CPU. There's a computer on fire, I'm pretty sure. So you have two computers. You have a computer on either side of you. Do either of them work, actually?
The computer that I used to play the intro and last week on, that one works so far.
Okay.
The computer that I use to play ads and other sound systems, that one works.
Okay.
The one that's recording things is completely shot. I've been trying to restart it for the past 3 minutes, and I just restarted my laptop, which we used to run Facebook Live.
So that's two for four back there. The computer to my right that I have in the studio has never been connected to the internet, as far as I know. Uh-oh. What? We just threw his hands in the air.
The other computer's still restarting.
Wow, great. Sometimes I really enjoy the fact that ESPN Kansas City is kind of its own rogue operation. And then sometimes it's this. And it's like, oh yeah, we need a computer that works.
We need more than one computer that works.
I was staring into my reflection, as I always do, just to make sure, you know, looking fresh, looking clean. Making sure I'm still attracted to myself.
See, I would mark that. If the computer worked!
I would mark, if I was in your shoes, I would mark that. Because there we go, there's a... Let's get that on an ESPN Kansas City t-shirt, huh? Anyway. I was saying in my
ESPN
reflection...
ESPN Kansas City. If the computer worked! if this computer dies, the good news is, they will have to get a new one to replace it. So, please die! Just burn already.
Just please die. I understand that at this point, a good host would just sort of power on with the previously planned content. But I'm frankly more interested in the personal hell that Beards is living in than I am even of the things we're going to talk about today. So we're going to take a break. And whenever we come back, we're going to talk about football. Will you be able to hear it? Who knows?
Isn't this a sports show?
We have 18 minutes left, and we haven't actually talked about anything.
Almost entirely.
Whenever we come back, we'll talk about football. That's a promise that we probably will not be able to live up to. That's next.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Whenever every other station in the city is on a commercial break, maybe we won't be.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
This isn't exactly how I phrase it, but this is the more concise way for me to be saying this. This show's better when I prepare more.
Duh.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
If you want to throw bread at me for $5, you can 100% do that.
On ESPN Kansas City.
There's a special delicious irony in the intro to today's show. Beards put together a sort of a yesterday on Almost Entirely Sports. In case you weren't around for the first hour of yesterday's show. Because yesterday's show, the first hour, was a disaster. As you heard, everything was breaking down. If you usually watch the show on Facebook Live, I think the goal for what Beards was doing there today was to say, hey, if you missed the show because you couldn't get the show the way you usually get the show yesterday, well, here's a summary. Well, Facebook Live's not working again today either.
For different reasons, too.
And this is especially hurtful, I think, because, like, obviously this is a radio station, so the stuff that gets broadcasted out, that's by default. The stuff that gets podcasted requires a little bit of effort, but not a ton. Beards and I have done this Facebook Live thing by ourselves. I make the graphics, we've each bought our own camera. Beards runs it all through his personal mixer and personal laptop. This is the game changer that we have worked so hard to create. And it's just not working. It's It's the sound of Beards exasperatedly breathing into the microphone.
And clicking the button for something that's not working!
So it's just been a really rough start of the week here. But I actually have a plan for the first hour of today's show that I'm not going to let get derailed by the technology. And it'll get podcasted out, because at least that's working today. During one of the moments that the Facebook Live was working last week, someone named Melton, whose Facebook profile picture is the Chiefs avatar, the Chiefs logo, commented and said, "Some of us was talking on Twitter how the Chiefs were still number one. You came on and said that the Pittsburgh Steelers were number one, the best team. Way to go, throw our own team under the bus. I guess they could use some help, and Pittsburgh radio talk host or sports writer if you think that way." Typos read as they were. A couple of things. So the tweet that Melton was referring to was a tweet wherever I was quoting Von Miller. Von Miller said something about how the Broncos are in a rough place and how next week, being Monday night against the Chiefs, they had to play the best team in football. So I quote tweeted that and said something sarcastic like, "Oh, I didn't know that the Broncos are playing the Steelers next week." Something that I thought was, pretty clearly, a joke. I don't know who the best team in football is. And neither do you. The Eagles looked pretty good last night. The Eagles have been really, really good. The Eagles lost to the Chiefs, who lost to the Steelers, who lost to a bunch of other teams, who looked very flawed. Chiefs have lost to the Raiders, who have lost to everybody. Man, I don't know who the best team is, so I made a little joke. I think most people got that. Anyway, that is a jumping off point into a larger conversation here. You the individual person listening to this right now, do you like it whenever the person that you're listening to just sort of infinitely lauds the team that you root for? Because I know some people do. I know that some people say, "Oh, you know what? If I want to listen to somebody be critical of my team, I'll go find a national host. Or if I want to listen to somebody be critical, I'll go find that. But I'm listening to you because I want a fan talking to a fan." And I get that. But I also kind of don't, I guess. And we've had this fight here a few times with a few different sort of like jumping off points. I want to be critical whenever we should be critical of the team. I want to praise the team whenever we should praise the team. The idea that also you have to root for a team whenever you're in the market. I happen to be a Chiefs fan because I've lived in Kansas my whole life. So it makes this job easier, because it's easier to talk about this team that I followed for my whole life. The idea that, though, if I moved to Pittsburgh, that I would suddenly start rooting for the Steelers, I think is kind of silly, right? Anyway, I don't know. That was a little wrench thrown in the gears of yesterday. Yesterday's show that was already a machine, so thoroughly jammed up by literally everything possible. I also feel like this has been a really bad couple days for Beards.
Hey, at least we're actually recording the normal way now.
Right, that's great. Our Windows XP computer is, in fact, recording.
Our multiple Windows XP computers.
Right.
And a Windows 95.
Glamour. Sports Talk Radio. Glamour. This has been a really challenging couple of days for Beards, I think. I've never seen him this aggravated. Yesterday was the height of it, and today is also really, like, testing his limits, and that scares me. Because I don't want to be around whenever Beards snaps.
I haven't punched a computer yet, don't worry.
No.
That'll happen if this continues.
That's the thing, is I've never really seen Beards, like, lash out at anybody or anything, like, seriously. And I'm a little bit afraid to see what's going to happen whenever you do. Like, I feel like I feel like the first time you punch a hole through a laptop is going to be the first scene in the movie.
Oh, no, it won't be my laptop that gets punched.
Whatever. Whenever you punch your hand through a computer screen, I feel like that's going to be the first scene in the movie about your life whenever everybody in the audience goes, oh, that's the moment whenever we should have known that he was going to become a serial killer. That's my concern for you, Beards. Is that you're gonna snap and you're gonna realize that you like destroying things. And then on the way home, there's gonna be like a squirrel in the road and you're not gonna slow down. In fact, you're actually gonna speed up a little bit. And then thump. You've taken the life of a squirrel and you kind of get a little thrill from that. And then 6 months later you've killed 7 people.
That escalated quickly.
I just think that's how this goes, I'm afraid. I think that's the escalation. I think that's perhaps the proper escalation of your story. And I think it's going to be ESPN Kansas City's fault.
Now that we can agree on.
That's the place where this launches you into an eventual homicidal downward spiral. For me, my homicidal downward spiral is going to be kicked off by someone listening to the show. Who says that I should move to Pittsburgh since I love the Steelers so much? I don't even like the Steelers, actually. I dislike the Steelers. There are some teams in sports that I'm not a fan of that I like. I'm rooting for the 76ers right now. Not my team. I just like them. I like what they're doing. In the NFL, I'm enjoying what the Eagles are doing right now. I rooted for Aaron Rodgers before his shoulder fell off. There are some things that aren't my team that I root for. I root for good quarterback play. I was rooting for the Falcons offense on Sunday night because I hated what they became. Anyway, I'm not moving to any of those places, although I did just list off 2 Philadelphia things. Maybe I should move to Philadelphia since I love them so much. Total shift over here. Unless Beards wants us to take a break. Beards are still very much in progress, right, for the Facebook Live thing?
I just restarted my computer to see if that would do anything.
I'm not all that optimistic for you.
No, this looks like it's an actual Facebook thing today.
Awesome. And all right, I'm going to go ahead and launch into the major point.
Go ahead. I won't stop you. Now, the computers might, but I won't.
One of these days, the microphones are all just going to fall off.
No, that's happened already. That's happened several times.
Actually, that happened over at 810 one morning, where the microphone just fell off of the stand.
Multiple times it happened.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They're going to fall off like rotting fruit off of a tree branch. Anyway, I want to talk about Brett Veach. Zach Allen today on Twitter asked a bunch of interesting questions, so thanks to him. He's at 715 Chiefs. He threw out some good prompts for today's show. First, he said, I really like Terrence Mitchell, but how do you feel about the Chiefs signing Byron Maxwell or trading for Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie? Byron Maxwell was just cut by the Dolphins. I think I got my facts right on that. He spent some time in Philadelphia, and he got released today. His contract was pretty large, yeah, and he was cut by the Dolphins. I think he was drafted by the Seahawks, spent a year in Philly, and then went to Miami for a couple of years on a pretty big contract. And as soon as I saw that he was cut, I thought, well, cornerback, Chiefs, all right, my ears are perked up. But as I said on Twitter, that right now, this is like asking me for relationship advice right after a really bad breakup. I've been too hurt by the Chiefs secondary this week. I just want anybody. If there's a warm body that plays cornerback, I want it. So this is a very fragile time to be asking me about Byron Maxwell or trading for Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie. But I was interested by it. I think if it allowed you to move a better corner into the slot, if it allowed you to play Maxwell at the slot, or allowed you to give us just some depth behind Peters or Mitchell in case something happens to either of those guys, it would make a lot of sense. But I'm not expecting the Chiefs to make either of those moves. Also, mercifully, Steven Nelson appears to be on the return. The Chiefs designated him. His status has changed to reserve/injured with a designation to return. That was from Therese Paylor. There are too many lists like that at this point. I don't know what that means. All I know is that Andy Reid said that he may be able to return for Monday night's game, which would be stupendous, as we talked about a little bit yesterday. If he is healthy enough to play, he should be starting at the slot spot and taking every single snap there. Anyway, that's sort of my thoughts on the cornerback position and everything going on there. Beard's head is in his hands currently.
Yeah, this is a Facebook thing, so we're probably just not going to have the stream today.
Very exciting. I wore my fresh new jacket for nothing. Not new, just like it. I guess it also gives me the advantage of having something to keep me warm from these fierce fall elements. But Zach also asked a question and made a couple statements about Brett Veach that I thought was interesting. He said, "I've also been very surprised by Veach. After him being so aggressive in his first month or two in Kansas City, he's been quiet, excluding the on and off with C.J. Spiller. So, like, I expected by now he would have signed or traded for a new receiver, a new safety, a new cornerback, and a new defensive coordinator." So now I'm asking on a larger scale here. About three-ish months into his role as general manager, what do we think about Brett Veach? He made the trade for Reggie Ragland. He made the trade for Cameron Irving. Both of those guys have started the last couple of weeks. Ragland appears to be the guy beside Derek Johnson for the foreseeable future. He's gotten plenty of playing time. Oh, they also traded for Kevin Pierre-Lewis. So they've tried to put some youth into that inside linebacker spot. Ramique Wilson has fallen all the way to a healthy scratch the last few weeks. And Derek Johnson is slowing down. So there's been an impact made there. Cameron Irving has been playing at guard since the exit of Laurent Duvernay-Tardif with his injury. Hopefully he will also be back very, very soon. We'll talk about the offensive line a little bit more later on today. But looking at Brett Veach, the Chiefs next year are going to have about negative $1.6 million in cap space if everything stands as it is right now, which obviously it won't, but that's the setup right now. And I think next year is going to be whenever Brett Veach makes his mark on this team in a really big way. Alex Smith, Derek Johnson, and Tom Bahali would create about $30 million in cap space. Those are three absolute faces of this team. At least a couple of those guys are probably eventual Ring of Honor guys. Alex Smith will turn into some draft picks, which could let Brett Veach move around, possibly back into the first round. D. Ford, according to Over the Cap, creates almost $9 million in cap space with no dead money. He is gone from this team if that's the case next year. He has not been productive enough for $9 million. Mahomes takes over in this world that I've built here. That's obviously a big move. I don't think they'll bring back Dustin Colquitt. His contract is up after this season, but he's overpaid at this point for his production, and the Chiefs aren't going to pay a punter a bunch of money. Chris Conley is still a good value at under $1 million next year, but that could be converted into some free cap space. And also, I would expect to see a Marcus Peters extension over this offseason, if at all possible. All of those things are places where I think Brett Veach is going to make his mark on this team in the next offseason, in the next year. It wouldn't shock me to see the Chiefs do something else throughout this, up until the trade deadline, throughout this actual regular season. But I'm also not particularly looking, I'm not holding my breath for it. It's hard to make moves like that in the NFL as it currently works. It's hard to convince teams that making a mid-season trade is going to pay off whenever the allure of draft picks can be so strong. So, a new receiver, well, who would it have been? You're not going to trade for Martavius Bryant because his contract is up after this year. That's not worth it for this team right now, especially because you got a guy like DeMarcus Robinson who looks really good, explosive, fast, quick, good hands, good route running. So I don't know what you would do there. A new safety, who would you bring in? You've got Eric Murray you've been developing in the system. Daniel Sorensen's been around for a while. Who do you bring in at safety? Who's out there to bring in partway through the season or very late in the offseason whenever he was hired? defensive coordinator? Is it going to do you any good as a playoff caliber team right now to switch it up? This offseason, does that change? Perhaps. But Bob Sutton's going to be the defensive coordinator of this team through the playoffs, however long that run is. I also have a couple of things to talk about, sort of the randomness of the NFL that we'll get to later on. We're going to talk to Matt Verderam here in about 5 minutes. But I understand seeing these places and saying, oh, well, where do we see a place for this team to improve? Receiver, safety, corner, defensive coordinator. I get all of that. I do. But whenever you bring in a guy to take over as GM late in the game and then into the actual season, he has very limited opportunities, I think, to actually improve the team. So I think that's why we haven't seen much from Brett Veach by way of where does this team actually improve. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Matt Verderam of FanSided. He is we're going to talk about all sorts of NFL things, obviously a lot to do with the Kansas City Chiefs. Also, he is a dad now, so I'm going to see if we can find out any terrible stories about his baby ruining his life in one way or another. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. Matt Verderam, whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
They're getting pressure on 43.8% of the time per pro football focus.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
The expert analysis you've grown to expect from this show. Pro football focus. I'm on top of it today. The technology around the building is melting down, but I can speak at least, which I guess is like half this show. We're now joined by Matt Verderam of FanSided. He's at Matt Verderam on Twitter. He does the Stacking the Box podcast. And we haven't talked to Matt in a little while. The last time we talked to him, I think, was just before he became a father. So, Matt, in the last month or so, in what way has your baby most tried to ruin your life?
That's a great question. How has she tried to ruin my life? Well, I was holding her a couple weeks ago when the Chiefs were playing Washington in the fourth quarter, and oh, no. Obviously a tight game. And all of a sudden I realized that she was just peeing all over me. So that was a good time. That was that was almost like a metaphor for what was about to come a few weeks later with the Chiefs. But that was not only the one time that happened. There have been many times where I've been targeted, shall we say, by Maisie.
The idea of it happening in the fourth quarter of the Chiefs Washington game is pretty stupendous, though. And the metaphors are, I don't know, grossly appropriate.
Yeah.
With all of the things in the NFL currently that seem to be such unsure things, as much randomness as it seems like we deal with sometimes, I saw your tweet yesterday or a couple days ago trying to pick out what are the playoff teams, who are the teams that you can actually lock into playoff spots. I'm curious where you stand now and if anything has changed with last night's game. You get another look at how good Philadelphia is. The best record in the NFL beaten by the now flailing incompetent Chiefs, if I've read my message boards correctly. Right now, if you had to sort of define the sure things in football, where would you even begin?
I think there's a few. I think in the NFC there's fewer. I think the Eagles in the NFC, they're going to win the East. I think, you know, they're clearly, with the schedule they have ahead of them, one of the weakest in the league and the way they've played. I do think Jason Peters being out for years is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Hall of Fame left tackle. So losing him, there's no easy fix for that. But I do think Philadelphia is going to win the East. I don't think any of those other divisions in the NFC are settled. I think Seattle and the Rams are going to battle out in the West. In the AFC, look, I think we know, and I know a lot of Chiefs fans are freaking out, I get it, but I do believe Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and New England, those are the three best teams, and those are the only three teams that have any chance of representing the AFC in Super Bowl 52.
I tend to agree with you on that because Even leading up to the Thursday night game against the Raiders, somebody asked me on Twitter on a scale of 1 to 100 how confident was I in the Chiefs winning, and I said 51, because I think the Chiefs are a thoroughly better team than Oakland, but if there's ever a time that something weird is going to happen, and now maybe weird means a really sloppy day defensively, and some poor execution, some missed assignments, and getting beat up by Jared Cook, if there's ever a time that's going to happen, it would be on a short week traveling to Oakland for a divisional game on Thursday Night Football. That all makes enough sense to where I was not pulling the panic ripcord. But it is kind of funny to be this far into the season and say there are like 20 teams in that mid-level that feel like they have a chance to make the playoffs and then to do exactly nothing else. If you had to look into that sort of section of the league that's not one of the five or six sure things or one of the four or five sure things on the bottom end, is there anybody in that middle section that you think has the best chance to maybe take a step up and surprise us a little bit?
I don't think in the AFC there is that team. I really don't. I think the gap between the top three and the rest of the conference is so wide. And I know some people, Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Deshaun Watson, give him a lot of credit. He's thrown 15 touchdowns, and that's all great. But if you watch this film, the exposure of him to some degree is coming. Because when he played Kansas City, he was largely terrible for three quarters.
Yeah.
And then in garbage time, threw three touchdowns. All of a sudden, it looked like he had this great game. He really didn't. I don't buy them, especially with Watt and Merciless out. I think in the NFC, I mean, you want to say maybe the Vikings, if they get a quarterback, they're a team I could see making a run toward the Super Bowl, and of course they host it this year.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle, we know their pedigree. That offensive line is just so bad, but I do think the rest of that team is talented enough. It could maybe overcome it. I think if Aaron Rodgers is healthy, I think the Packers are going to win the NFC. Now, sure. I don't think they're making the playoffs.
Agreed.
So the NFC is wide open, and the AFC, it's a three-team race. All of them are 5-2. It's really about who has the best record of those three teams over the last 9 games.
Let's talk about the Chiefs specifically then in relation to the Patriots and Steelers perhaps, but more specifically in these last couple of weeks, the two losses the Chiefs have taken, we know that Alex Smith thrives the most whenever he trusts the offensive line in front of him, and they don't even make him consider that there might be something coming up the middle to consume him alive anytime soon. How much do you think that the sort of regressive-looking Alex Smith from the Steelers game could have been attributed to him not trusting his offensive line so much, and how do you think that the return of Mitch Morse and not DeVernay Tardif, as soon as that is possible, how do you think that's going to change the version of Alex Smith that we see through the rest of this season?
I mean, I don't think Alex Smith is any bit of the problem of this team right now, but I know what you mean. Like,
sure.
I think it helps, of course. I mean, Mitch Morse and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif are two of the best offensive linemen in football.
Mm.
I mean, so you're getting two guys back who are not only marginal upgrades, you're talking about Duvernay-Tardif replacing Cam Irving.
Yep.
And if anybody's watched Cam Irving,
yep,
that is about as big an upgrade as you can make, maybe short of Stephen Nelson over Philip Gaines.
Yep.
So I think the Chiefs, look, they're getting much healthier. I expect all those guys to play on Monday night, maybe with the exception of Nelson, but I think the offensive linemen are back. Nothing against Chris Conley, who I think is a solid pro for the Chiefs. I think DeMarcus Robinson's better than him.
Yeah, he's just great.
He's been terrific, and that's one thing that has been lost in these two games, because they've lost and everybody's down on them. DeMarcus Robinson has been terrific
mm-hmm.
in these two games. And if that kid even emerges as a quasi-threat,
yep,
the Chiefs' offense just becomes that much more scary. But, look, you know what? With Alex Smith, and I was all about them drafting a quarterback, and I still think they did the right thing. But to be fair, Alex Smith right now, if the Raiders don't win that game, if it's an incomplete pass at the end by Derek Carr, which mm-hmm. it was twice
mm-hmm.
or it wasn't,
mm-hmm.
Alex Smith is hands down the MVP of the league right now. So I think, look, he's almost got 2,000 yards passing, 15 touchdowns, no picks. He's completing 72% of his throws. He's got the highest yards per attempt in the league. Alex Smith is the reason, in a lot of ways, along with Kareem Hunt, that the Chiefs are even 5-2.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you on that. And I didn't mean to say that Alex Smith is the problem, although he did miss a couple throws at the end of the Steelers game that made me want to barf, but I digress.
He did.
That is definitely the thing that I copped to this a couple days ago that I know this isn't the smartest possible way of looking at the problems in games, but usually if you have a chance to win a game at the end and then you fail to, that's the thing I look at first as to what went wrong. Because if you say, oh, well, back in the second quarter, if this goes differently,
right.
So many things else go wrong. So Alex had a chance against the Steelers and the secondary had a chance against the Raiders. I digress. But you say not even close to the biggest problem. Agree with you there. What do you see right now as the thing that would give you any hesitance or might have you slot the Chiefs below the Steelers and Patriots in that three-man race for the AFC?
Well, first of all, I think they're better than New England. I really do.
Really?
I think if they see New England, I don't even care where they see New England.
Uh-huh.
I think they'll beat them come January. And look, that's obviously a fairly large statement considering the success that team's had. It's more... Yeah. It's not that I don't respect New England. It's more about that, you know, sometimes you're just a bad matchup for another team. The mm-hmm. Chiefs are a nightmare for them. The Chiefs are fast. The Chiefs spread them out. The Chiefs give them all kinds of problems, very similar to how the Steelers give the Chiefs problems. So I think sometimes when you're that good, and those three teams are very good and they're very close in talent, I think it's really about matchups. That being said, look, I think the biggest problem right now, everybody's screaming about Bob Sutton, and mm-hmm. I get that to some extent, but it's their execution.
Yeah.
If you watch the film of that Raiders game, there were times they were in the perfect defense. They were in the right calls, and they can't execute. They'll blow coverages. And look, I'm never the guy who says it's one player's fault, and that's why they're losing. And it's certainly not one player's fault right now. Phillip Gaines is atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
Like to the point that if you watch the film, it's actually you start to feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Like he can't run. He's never been the same after his torn ACL. He doesn't have the same change of direction. He doesn't have that straight line speed. And if you watch that game, as the game went on, the Raiders took Amari Cooper, who's always lined up outside,
yep.
and just lined him up in the slot and said, you can't guard him. We're throwing at you all night. And they did.
See, I assume that you're on board with as soon as Steven Nelson is back, he should be in that spot for every snap that his body can handle, correct?
I don't even think there's a question.
Okay.
I think at this juncture... I've not had a problem with the way Terrence Mitchell's played. I think he's been fine.
Agreed.
Their problem is Eric Murray's a young kid, and he's had some really good games, but he struggled at times. That's going to happen. You're going to have to live with that. That's just the way it's going to be this year.
Yep.
The other side of it, though, is Gaines, and look, I don't think it's a lack of effort. I don't think it's anything like that, but he just can't play.
Yeah.
I mean, they've reached the point where if Steven Nelson's not ready come Monday night, I would do anything but put Phillip Gaines in there. I would put Murray in the slot and put another linebacker on the field. I'd put DJ White or Kenneth Acker on the field, anything. Because at this point, it's almost torture to put, even for Gaines, to put him on the field.
And maybe I was alone in this. I can't remember. But I saw some stuff from DJ White that kind of made me raise my eyebrow a little bit and say, he at least seems like he has the athleticism to stick around with NFL-wide receivers. And Phillip Gaines doesn't even have that right now.
I just think sometimes you don't know what you have until you just give it a shot. And look, they could try DJ White and he could be awful.
Yep.
But I remember last year when they could not find a second corner and they were going through guy after guy after guy, Acker, Gaines, White. And all of a sudden, they put Terrence Mitchell in the game and everybody's like, well, who the heck is Terrence Mitchell? Well, it turns out Terrence Mitchell is pretty damn good down the stretch. So, look, I'm not saying there's any – I think the best case scenario for the Chiefs is Nelson comes back, he plays like we're accustomed to seeing him playing, and then all of a sudden you've got a trio of corners who can play.
Yes.
And there's no weak sisters, and I think that helped Bob Sutton dial up some more pressure because you don't have to worry about covering over the top all the time. And I think sometimes in football, one difference, one personnel change, one adjustment, it's the entire difference. And so I don't think it makes them go from a terrible defense to a great defense, but with their offense, if that defense is just competent, especially with the schedule ahead, they're going to win almost every game they play.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this point there are two, maybe three games that sort of make you a little bit nervous going forward. At Dallas is going to be a game where they're probably not going to be favored. And then I was looking at Denver at the end of the year, in week three or four, as a really tough game. That doesn't feel so scary anymore. I'm not afraid of the Giants. So, yeah, I agree with you on all of that. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. I think the schedule, I was in the same boat as you. A couple of weeks ago, you looked at week 17 and said, geez, that game at Denver, that tough game. If they score 10 points in that game, they win because Denver scored 3 points that aren't garbage time points in the last 2 weeks against the Giants and the Chargers. It's not good.
No. And we'll talk about this Monday's game here in just a second. But you said that you think the Chiefs are better than the Patriots whenever talking about that trio of teams at the top end. And you said, you know, that they're a matchup nightmare for the Patriots, partially in the way that the Steelers have been a matchup problem for the Chiefs. But this is something that has been aggravating me since that Steelers game maybe even hit halftime. I keep going back to the week before, whenever the Jags beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, the Jaguars ran for something like 230 yards, and it felt like Kareem Hunt never had the ball twice in a row against the Steelers. So I heard some people talk about how Pittsburgh is a matchup problem for the Chiefs. To me, it seems like very often the Chiefs simply wanted to play in a way that Pittsburgh was prepared for and didn't attack the places that they could have actually had some advantages against Pittsburgh. I don't know if I expect it to get fixed if they have to play each other again in the playoffs, but it's something that I keep staring at and just wondering, like, am I taking crazy pills? Is Andy Reid stuck with his game plan that he puts together ahead of the game, or was it just something that fell apart because the NFL was bizarre?
Well, I think you bring up some good points. Like, I do think that part of it was the Steelers had a very good game plan for how to curtail what the Chiefs like to do, which is, of course, run the ball at Hunt and get the ball at the Kelce and whatnot. The problem with the Steelers, from the Chiefs' vantage point, is they're very fast defensively, and they're very physical. And the Chiefs, if there's one knock on them, is the Chiefs sometimes don't deal well with really physical teams. All those years in Denver had that really big, brooding defense. Kansas City at times almost seemed like they didn't want any part of it. And I don't think so much that that's the case anymore. I think the Chiefs have grown up a little bit. But the Chiefs' offense is about timing and rhythm. And I don't want to say it's finesse, because I don't believe in the NFL you can be finesse and win. But it's not smash mouth. The Chiefs' game is not the line up and punch me in the mouth. Pittsburgh does a very good job of that. I think if the Chiefs see him again, the one thing to take out of that game was, as the game wore on, the Chiefs started to figure them out a little bit. And that was something that, even though they lost, the Chiefs started to spread them out. The Chiefs started getting the ball into the hands of receivers quickly and just letting them make plays after the catch. And we saw that the Chiefs almost, if it wasn't for what was a missed interception, maybe would have won the game. So I do think it's the worst matchup for them, maybe in the league. But I also think they couldn't have played worse that day and were 30 yards from winning the game.
Yeah. Or Philip Gaines' face mask being a little less bouncy away from winning the game, perhaps.
Or maybe you just get two hands up and catch it.
Or Philip Gaines having two working hands.
Do that.
Yeah, any of those things would have been great. We're talking to Matt Verderam here from Fanside at Sack in the Box podcast. He's at Matt Verderam on Twitter, but you probably know that already. Looking to this Monday night game, it's crazy how much the last 2 weeks have changed everything for the Broncos. As the Chiefs have also dropped a couple of games back to back, it feels, I think the Chiefs are a 7.5 point favorite. That feels low right now. Am I crazy?
I thought it felt about right. I mean, because basically the 3 points should be in the home team. So Vegas is saying even if that game was in Denver, the Chiefs should be favored. You know, Denver's desperate. And, you know, look, I've been getting killed on Twitter by every Chiefs fan. It's just, please don't ever pick another Chiefs game. For the last 2 weeks, I said, hey, look, I think the Chiefs are going to roll. I thought Pittsburgh was dysfunctional and they had a lot of issues. Obviously, they came out and played well. I thought the Chiefs would beat the Raiders, who looked like crap for the better part of the season. The Chiefs didn't. But Denver right now, I mean, look, everybody talks about the Chiefs, they lost two games. I don't think the Chiefs have been exposed as much as the Chiefs are just having what, you know, every NFL team has. They have a little bit of a tough stretch.
Yeah.
Denver, to me, they've been exposed a little bit from the standpoint that if you don't let them run the ball, they cannot beat you. They have no ability to throw the ball over the top, especially with Emmanuel Sanders hurt right now. It's such a slog for them to gain any kind of traction offensively. And if the Chiefs defense doesn't play well on Monday night, then you can hit every alarm bell in the city. If they can't stop that offense at home on Monday Night Football, then you've got real problems. But I honestly would be surprised if that happened.
You've mentioned that the Chiefs played a terrible game against the Steelers and were 30 yards away from winning. You mentioned that they don't think they've been exposed at any point, and I agree with you on both of those levels. I also can look back on the season so far, and I don't think that we've seen the Chiefs play much of anything close to their best game yet. Is that something that you hope kicks in come playoff time and takes another level? Is that something we're just never going to see because of how they're built somehow?
No, I think, look, they've played a really hard schedule. I think sometimes people lose sight of that because you just want them to win every game. They're 5-2, and they played just about every good team in the NFL. I mean, really, they've played New England. They've played Pittsburgh. They played at the Chargers. Chargers aren't a great team. The Chargers are a dangerous team.
Yeah.
They played Washington. They've played Philly. I mean, look, if somebody said to you before the year started, hey, 5-2, would you sign for it?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely,
for sure.
100%. And so I think we'll see them get better. The Chiefs historically under Reed, except for the first year, have gotten better as the year has gone on, especially after their bye week. So you look at what is after their bye week this year, the Giants, the Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins, the Raiders, the Chargers, the Broncos, most of those games at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seven games. I never pick a team right to run the table, but if there's ever a schedule you look at and say they may not lose, that would be it. They're going to be favored in every single game after the bye. And so they're 5-2. They've lost a couple, but realistically, if somebody said to you, do you think this team could go 13-3? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they'd probably at least go 12-4.
Yep.
As long as they don't get hurt, they're just the schedule's so much easier from now to the end of the year. I think that has to get factored in.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. One other thing with the defense that we haven't talked about yet is there have been some stats that have come out over the last couple of weeks showing how bad the Chiefs have been in assorted sub-packages. I think they're worst in the league by a full yard in the nickel package. And I'm also curious, in a similar vein, how you feel about how the Chiefs and Bob Sutton have been using Justin Houston. They've spent a lot of time dropping him into coverage and trying to get pressure with other guys. Bob Sutton said a few weeks ago, this stuck with me because it just sort of felt blasphemous. Someone said, why do you drop Houston as often as you do? He says, well, you got to keep the defense guessing, which I understand in theory. In practice, it's looked a whole lot like taking your best pass rusher out of a pass rushing equation. But what do you think about how the Chiefs have used Justin Houston and about how these sub-packages have affected the defense's performance so far?
Well, the nickel stat is probably the most worrisome for me because your nickel defense in the NFL today is your base defense. Right. And if you can't get off the field, if you're going to have, I think it was 8 yards of play
in
the nickel, I mean, that's terrifying. Now, again, not to beat them up, but I think it goes back to when Philip Gaines is not part of that scheme, I think you're going to see that change drastically. Mm-hmm. I genuinely, listen, and I'm not trying to make Steven Nelson be Deion Sanders here, but he is so much better than Gaines.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a vast improvement. And if you don't, then really be concerned. But I do think there's reason to believe that's going to get better. Now, as far as Houston goes, I will defend Sutton most of the time. They've been good defensively under him throughout his tenure. Dropping Justin Houston more than 7-10% of plays is insane.
Yes.
It is insane.
Yes.
Look, if you're on Monday night, I think Houston this year has dropped 26% of the time. If Von Miller dropped 26% of the time, wouldn't you send it over to Joe Woods and Vance Joseph over in Denver? It's crazy. Anytime you're playing in a sport as a coach, you should be saying, I want to do whatever the opponent doesn't want me to do.
Yep.
And believe me, there's not one instance ever where the opponent says, geez, I really hope they bring Houston off the edge. And this week, Donald Stevenson's already out. Menelik Watson, the starting right tackle, is day-to-day with a calf. They're not sure if he's going to be able to play. Billy Turner, who's their third-string right tackle, broke his hand. He's out. They might have to start a left guard in Barber over on the right side at tackle. If they don't go after that all game long, then Bob Sutton should really be psychologically examined.
Okay, Matt, we have about 30 seconds left here. Two very quick questions. You tweeted out the Chiefs can move Alex Smith, Derek Johnson, and Tom Bahali for $30 million in cap space next year. What are the odds that each of those moves happen?
I think Ali and Johnson are pretty close to 100%. I think Smith, he keeps playing like this, he's not going to get moved. They might try to restructure it.
And according to Over the Cap, D Ford would be a $0 cap hit and give almost $9 million in cap relief next year. He's gone also, right?
Who's behind them?
Their second-round pick or their first-round pick that they get after trading away Alex Smith. That's my theory.
And it's possible. It's possible. But I'm not – I think D Ford – I'm a D Ford guy. I think there's value to him. But it's absolutely possible, as is Alan Bailey.
You almost got through this whole interview without saying something absolutely ridiculous, you D Ford guy. Thank you, Matt Verderam of FanSided. Go hear more of him talking football in the Stacking the Box podcast. He also has been peed on now during Chiefs games.
Yep. By my daughter. It's always a treat.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Roger Goodell just wants you to just be a fan of something uniform, something non-individualistic, something safe and inoffensive like the Redskins.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
The last two liners you've pulled out, Beards, have really confused me at the beginning. They've both sounded like me saying serious things. Like, wait a second. The liners are not for my hot takes. The rest of the show is for my hot takes. But I couldn't say anything. I couldn't say per Pro Football Focus or whatever on the first one. And that time, snuck that little joke right in there.
I'm digging deep on the liners today. I'm pulling some that we haven't used before.
It's good. I enjoy hearing my own cleverness after I've already forgotten about the joke that I made. Holy bleep, it's going to be 98 degrees for the first game of the World Series tonight in L.A. Holy cow.
Who says baseball is a fall sport in October when it's the playoffs? That came out wrong. At least that's working. Hey, I can mark things today. You want to listen?
I think what you were literally, I think what you said there, if you would have decoded it, would have been, who says October's a fall month?
Sure, that works too. We'll go with that.
No one says that baseball is a fall sport. No one's ever said that.
I meant playoffs, but whatever.
Fine. And that also concludes our World Series preview. It's Houston and in L.A., woo. Baseball's regional, man. Even, like, I'll watch the World Series if it's on in front of me. But, like, I'm probably going to go see the new Blade Runner movie tonight.
If it's still in theaters.
I think it is.
They pulled it from a bunch of theaters.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, they pulled it from a ton of theaters.
There's the Cinetopia, I think it's in Overland Park, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
They have super cheap tickets on Tuesday nights, so I just, like go see a movie on Tuesday
nights. It's a good movie. Really
you have seen the new one?
Yes. I
watched the original one. Actually, we apparently watched the director's cut accidentally because uh-huh. There's no narration. Have you seen the original Blade Runner movie?
Yes. It's been years since I've seen it. I meant to rewatch it before I saw the new one, but I didn't get around to it.
It made no bleeping sense. And I am not that dude that comes out of Inception. He's like, oh, bro, I didn't get it, man.
It's a weird movie.
I genuinely was not following what was going on.
It's been a while since I've seen it, so I can't comment on what I remember from it or not, but I mean, I thought it was okay when I first saw it. I wasn't in love with it.
Aesthetically?
Oh, no, it's very pretty.
Beautiful.
The original one's very pretty.
It was, and it's like 30 years old. Really, there were a couple of shots in it that I was saying to the people I was watching with, and if I saw this in the new one, whenever we go see that one, I would be like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. This aesthetically all totally works. But the actual, like, plot of the story, there's so many things in the original Blade Runner that I could not keep up with. But I'm excited about the new one, hopefully.
The new one's really good. I enjoyed it a lot.
And that's what I'll be doing instead of watching World Series Game 1. Have you seen the movie Best in Show? It's a mockumentary about dog showers and groomers and stuff.
No, I have not.
I watched that last night instead of watching Monday Night Football.
Yeah. I half watched Monday Night Football. I also watched half of an NBA game.
I haven't had a hard time. I shouldn't say I've had a hard time watching non-Chiefs stuff for a while, because I haven't. And in fact, I wanted to enjoy Sunday Night Football. I watch every second of Sunday Night Football. But the Monday night thing is weird because the red zone spoiled me so much that sitting down and watching a single NFL game from front to back that doesn't just have thrills throughout the whole thing, I just am like so thankful for Twitter halfway through.
I'm kind of doing that with League Pass a little bit. Last couple of times I've gotten on there to watch a game, it'll be like, oh, man, this game's kind of getting a little slow. What else is on?
Right.
Oh, I was going to watch Blazers Suns. Oh, God, they're down 40. Never mind.
Right. But you usually have at least a few options that you can flip through, and that's fun.
And then the Nuggets are completely blacked out, which is very depressing.
Why?
Because they're the Nuggets, and they've been blacked out regionally for years.
In Kansas City?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't even get it at national games for them. Which is sad.
Because you're supposed to go out to Denver and buy
yes.
tickets and see them in person?
Yep.
That's astronomically confusing.
I don't know.
Makes no sense.
Detroit might be doing that soon. Have you seen their attendance pictures?
I have.
They're depressing.
They are depressing.
They're depressingly bad.
I actually, this all was set up to talk about Monday Night Football in some regard. Jason Peters, for the Eagles left tackle, he's out for the season with his knee injury, and they're showing the video right now of him getting carted off and all his teammates around just like high-fiving him as he's on the cart and everything, and it's so sad. Wentz has been great, and the Eagles are the best team in football right now by, I would say, any metric, and certainly by the win-loss metric, as random as that can be. The Chiefs could very easily be 7-0, just as they could very easily be worse than that. But Wentz has benefited in a huge way from how good that offensive line has been, and now losing Jason Peters is going to make that all very interesting. And also last night, as I was watching the highlights and everything and seeing what I had missed on Twitter, both of them looked like actual contenders. Both of them were getting praised as such, appropriately so. And the Chiefs beat both of those teams. And I know that Wentz right now is going to be the new star for a little while. And Verderam said last segment that he thinks Alex Smith is the MVP of the league right now, or at least he certainly would be if he would have found DeMarcus Robinson against the Steelers, or if the last pass against the Raiders is incomplete. Makes it even easier. But I think Wentz or Brady is probably going to win MVP, Offensive Player of the Year, whatever. Kareem Hunt still, I think, in line for a Rookie of the Year, but he's been certainly worse in the absence of Mitch Morse and Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, which brings me to a stat about the Chiefs' offensive line that I thought was interesting from @BarleyHop on Twitter. So on October 3rd, post-LDT injury, the Chiefs were top five in tackle for loss percentage, next to last in sack percentage per dropback versus the average, which means after LDT went out, the Chiefs were allowing Alex Smith to get sacked more often and second to worst in the league. And there were more tackles for loss built up in this offensive line than just about anywhere else in football, even with how good Kareem Hunt has been. So that is a little connection point to say, if Morris and LDT are back this week, I think Kareem Hunt is going to go back from his disappointing performances these last 2 weeks when he still had over 100 yards from scrimmage in both games. I think he's going to look like the guy we saw through the first 5 weeks, and he'll get back to that Rookie of the Year pace that he was on. But I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, a story that I just saw pop up on Twitter during the last commercial break, Colin Kaepernick has signed a book deal with Random House for $1 million, which is much less than he would make in the NFL. And someone is eventually going to take a big fat bleep on this. Stay out of my mentions. If with that, please, I don't care. Because I think this is interesting. And this is not going to be a 15-minute segment on Colin Kaepernick. Don't skip ahead. It's okay. Shh. The details of the agreement are not out yet, or when the book is going to be. And I'm just saying now, I want to throw this out there. I think if he writes, what happened by Colin Rodham Kaepernick, it's going to fall real flat. Would you please find Colin Kaepernick's real middle name for me? And I'm pretty sure that Hillary Clinton's book is called Well, What Happened Was. I think that's actually official. Book title, What's Happening? Go ahead.
Colin Rand Kaepernick.
Rand?
Rand.
Like Rand Paul.
Like Ayn Rand. There we go. Okay.
All right. I think Rand Paul is named after Ayn Rand.
I think Ayn Rand was named after Colin Kaepernick.
Well, that's time is a flat circle. So if he goes straight up What Happened style and writes this huge tell-all, I don't know if that's going to be all that interesting.
The O.J. Simpson.
If
I killed my wife.
Right. I think if Kaepernick does that, it's probably going to be kind of interesting, and I would read the free excerpt and think, I wonder where this is going. But I'm wondering if he's going to go in a direction where it's more like the Know Your Rights camps that he's been putting on, like working with kids and stuff, where it's not necessarily like a picture book, but where it's something that's sort of aimed at a younger audience to say, hey, here's some good things to know about, like, your average interaction with the police. Here's some things to know about, the difficulties of being black in America. Here's some stories of people who have had good or bad interactions and how this could
how these bridges can be built up a little more. Here are the things that you need to know about your rights in these situations. If he does that, I think this could be, it would just be very constructive. I don't know where else that kind of help is found. That's sort of been the thing that he's really been working on since he's been out of the league. So I'm kind of interested to see what happens there. Also, is Teddy Bridgewater actually writing a book, or actually like in a book of some sort about, like, it's basically the Lebatard thing. Have you not heard about this?
Yeah, I thought it was like his girlfriend or something was writing a book.
Yeah, it's something like that.
A children's book, I think.
Now, oh, hold on. I just searched Teddy Bridgewater as if that was going to be enough to get me to a book thing.
That's what he's known for.
Teddy books. Bridgewater's girlfriend pens children's book series. I got it. But if you, if you're not familiar, Dan Le Batard's show has come up with a whole narrative for how Teddy Bridgewater sounds like the name of an animatronic bear, or not an animatronic
stuffed bear,
a personified. Oh God, what's it called? Whenever is it personification? I guess it's just personification. A personified bear, a cognitively an aware, self-aware stuffed bear. God, I'm explaining this well. Teddy Bridgewater sounds like the name of a living stuffed bear that saves a town from being flooded by plugging a hole in a dam or something. And they have this whole narrative of, like, all these other characters and what they are and everything. It's fantastic. It's really funny.
I'm trying to find the summaries of what they've got as different characters. The Lebatard Show.
Oh, yeah, there's a minute and a half long thing here. I found the link here, Beards. See if you can pull this up.
That involves technology.
Yeah,
we can't
right.
do
no,
that
that's
today.
Bad. You're right. They just, they, whatever. They've discussed more about their fake Bridgewater book. I'll check it out during the break. We might come back to this sweet story. What the hell were we talking about? I guess
Kaepernick's
book, Teddy Bridgewater's book, whatever. I'm just kind of interested to see what Kaepernick's book's going to be about. If it's going to be a big novel, I don't think it's going to be that interesting. If it's aimed to a younger audience to say, hey, here's a little handbook of some things you should know, I think that'd be great. Like, that only, you know, does positive things. And then, of course, it's going to be like a set in a fictional world where everybody's an animal, so it takes the edge off of everything. And then the police officer he interacts with is going to be played by a pig, and then everyone's going to, it's going to just, then it spirals into nothing. Everybody gets lost right there. Like, oh, come on, Colin. You can't do that. That's not going to happen. It's just a little joke. And also, Castro plays a really strangely large role in this book. It's really confusing. It's really bizarre that, and he's not necessarily the villain. He's just sort of one of the characters. It's all really odd. I wanted to talk about how random the NFL has been, but I don't even know what I was going to say anymore. I think it's funny because, again, somebody asked me on Twitter, I've said this 15 times now. Somebody asked me on Twitter before the Raiders game how confident I was in the Chiefs beating the Raiders. I'm 95% sure that the Chiefs are a better team than Oakland. But I was 51% sure they would win in Oakland on Thursday Night Football because weird stuff happens, man. I want to talk about Sunday Night Football some, actually. I think the Patriots are back on track. I also thought that the Falcons' offense is really good, and I thought that the Patriots' defense was toast. And then on Sunday Night Football, the Falcons' offense was shut down by a Patriots' defense that hadn't shut down anybody so far, ever. The Steelers, who are one of the three teams, I agree with Matt, one of the three teams that actually has a chance in the AFC, the week before they beat the Chiefs, they lost to the Jaguars. And I don't think the Jags are anything other than a good defense and a good running back, fully hampered by their incompetent quarterback. I don't know what to actually believe in the NFL, because I was even thinking about, like, so the World Series, you know, it's a 7-game series. In baseball, you get 162 games. In the NBA, you get 82. 82? 82. I thought for a second, wait, it's an 81, it's 82. I talk too fast sometimes for my own brain to make sure I'm fact-checking. But the NFL gives you such small sample sizes. I don't know why we actually buy into this idea that 16 games of an NFL season gives you anything close to a good enough sample size to figure out who's actually good. If we played 16 Major League Baseball games once every Sunday for over the course of 17 weeks, so everyone has a week off, I don't think we would... I think we would all be like, well, wait a second, this obviously means nothing.
Well, baseball's kind of the same way when it gets to the playoffs.
How so?
Well, like, as Royals fans, we know this. The first year the Royals made the World Series.
Right.
Well, no, just not even that. It's just like, the playoffs are so weird because it's like, oh, a team just gets super hot and the Royals sweep their way to the World Series.
Right.
Or a pitcher gets super dominant. Basketball seems to be the only one that's actually like, these are usually the two or three best teams that are in the finals every
year. Baseball seems to have gotten it right this year. You get 200 win teams for the first time in like 25 years. But that's rare because this is the first time that two teams with 100 wins have met in like 25 years. But you're right, basketball is, the NBA is the one place where it always seems to go the way it should. You have a pretty large sample size. You have series that are long enough to keep anything bizarre from happening. How long has it been since somebody below a 3 seed made a conference championship? It's been a while, right?
I want to say, I know the Celtics made the finals in 2010 as like a 4 seed.
Okay, so.
And they beat a 60-some win Cleveland team with LeBron on it to do it.
But it's incredibly rare.
Yes, it's not normal.
And eventually, in March Madness, you get down to the end. It's ones and twos usually, but you always have an 8 in the Sweet 16. That always happens. Always.
Or there's a 4 somewhere.
Or a 4 gets to the Elite 8, or whatever. Or whatever Oregon was. Was Oregon a 3 last year? I think they were. They get to the Final 4. Whatever. But the NFL is dealing with such a comically small sample size. I have no idea what happens if you just turned off injuries, right? Or if injuries were only as common as they are in basketball, and you played 82 NFL games. I think the Chiefs would probably be the second best team in football, the second most successful team in football, or in the AFC, I should say. I don't think the Steelers. I think we've seen too many flaws from the Steelers. I think the Patriots probably get it figured out over that period of time. That's all kind of irrelevant, though. The thing that I just think is funny is how tiny all of this is. We react to each game so gigantically in a way that you would never do over the course of 16 basketball games or 16 baseball games.
So I did a little quick research, and the lowest NBA seed ever win a championship were the 94 Rockets. They won 47 games. They were sixth place in the West, but they had, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon at his peak,
right,
and Clyde Drexler kind of still at his peak.
Right.
And they'd won the year before that.
And especially in the most modern iteration of the NBA.
No, it's a lot different because they went from, I think the first round back then was only 5 games, so it kind of made for more random.
A little more random,
but
right.
Now it's usually 1 or 2s, maybe a 3.
Think about how crazy that is. That, like, in the baseball playoffs, every team that makes it to the World Series is playing more games than an entire NFL season. So, all of that to say, the analyzation that we do after every week and after every game is kind of silly. Because the Phillies probably beat the Dodgers at some point this year. But that probably happened. I'm confident. I'm sure that it did. I'm not going to look it up right now because I don't care that much. But we react. We have the power rankings that move after every game because every week is your Super Bowl. And then the playoffs are so bizarre. It makes for a thrilling season. I love it. And the NFL regular season and the NFL playoffs. The NFL is my favorite sport. It's my favorite league. It's my favorite season for all of those reasons and a bunch more. I love it, but it is so bleeping random. So the Chiefs could lose to the Broncos at home on Monday night, and it would still kind of make sense. Diagnosing the actual problems is really hard. Here's an example of how random it is. We just talked for a while about how bad Philip Gaines has been. He was in position against Antonio Brown, against the Steelers. The ball hit him in the face. If his hands come together a quarter of a second quicker, the Chiefs win that game. And Philip Gaines is one of the heroes. Still a guy that you can look at the tape and go, ooh, he's been struggling. But you herald him in that game as a hero. But it bounces off his face. Antonio Brown pulls it in. The Chiefs are 5-2 now. Philip Gaines is about to get benched again. Rightfully so, still.
C.J. Spiller's been cut and release again since then.
That actually makes sense because that's a systematic thing. It's because he's replacing Charkendrick West whenever he's hurt, and West is coming back, it seems like. But the kind of thing that we freak out about is just, it's just silly. And it's also, again, it's part of the reason that it's so fun, because randomness breeds hilarity very often. Or, you know, tragedy, I guess, if you're the Chiefs in some cases. I just think it's funny. As always, you can tweet the show at JB Briscoe. I was going to say you can comment on the Facebook live stream, but you can't. There is no Facebook live stream. We're going to post a video of it later if that tickles your fancy. But, I mean, it kind of undercuts the interactive part of it.
For those people that haven't listened yet.
Right, that's true. So if you're hearing this right now on the podcast, scamper on over to the Facebook live video that's been posted already. If you're listening live now, you're completely stuck. Whenever we come back, I want to tell you what sports talk radio shows are secretly CBS comedies in disguise. I'll explain next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
That can't be what Bill O'Brien wanted, because he could not, if he believed that Tom Savage would keep Deshaun Watson on the bench for a full NFL season, he is a nincompoop.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Good choice of word.
Thank you. It felt the most accurate.
On ESPN Kansas City.
After we finish the last segment, in case you're just joining us, in which I said, whenever we come back, I'll explain to you which radio shows are CBS comedies in disguise. We went to break, and then Beard said, I'm interested. I thought you might be. So, apparently, Colin Cowherd said something on his show about Benjamin Albright, who we've had on this show a couple of times, and how he didn't know what he was talking about with some college quarterback potentially staying another year. Honestly, couldn't care less about that specific part of it. Ben has been very good. He seems like he knows his stuff. Cowherd taking a swipe at him seems dumb. Whatever. There's your I don't even remember what quarterback was talked about. It does not matter to me. Anyway, your friend and mine, TJ Carpenter, tweeted something very funny on Twitter that I think was the seed planted in a really wonderful concept that we have to explore the space of a little bit. TJ said, all I know is whenever I was a teenager, Colin Cowherd was the man. Then I became an adult. He's like the Dane Cook of sports talk radio. And I saw that and just kind of went, ooh, yeah. Let's play with that. So I have two definitive ones. I tweeted one. And then we had this whole idea of, well, let's what are sports talk radio shows compared to other forms of media? I've expanded beyond CBS terrible comedies, but it's definitely the starting place for these first two. So, Beards, if you can weave any magic here, feel free to let me know. Also, I'd like for you to make sure that these make sense, because I've got two to kick us off. First of all, Mike and Mike is the Big Bang Theory. 100% accurate. You will not tell me off this one. It's hugely popular. I have no idea why. It's like
That's pretty good.
Good
one to start.
It's also Mike and Mike is sports talk radio for people who are like, I'm getting the best sport. And listen, man, I know that there are people who listen to this show that listen to Mike and Mike, and I know the people who listen to this show who like the Big Bang Theory. This is not an indictment on you as a person.
But I'm not one of them.
But I'm not. I don't do either of those two things.
Nope.
And I'm gonna say something that's going to be degrading to you if you are in either of those bases. And I'm sorry. I don't really mean it. But I used to listen to Mike and Mike. I don't anymore. Mike and Mike is like smart sports talk radio for dumb people. As Big Bang Theory is like smart funny television for dumb people. That's my theory.
I'm trying to think, what's the spinoff Young Sheldon then to Mike and
Mike? Here's the second piece of this, Beards. Thank you. Mike and Mike are about to split. Greenberg is going to start his own show. And I think Trey Wingo is going to be like Mike and Wingo or something. And I think Mike Golick Jr. might also be joining the show. I don't know. But Mike Greenberg is going to go start his own like 6 a.m. ESPN TV show. That's Young Sheldon. It's amazing, is it not amazing?
Mike and Hal.
Right, good call. Is that not incredible? It works at every level. I love it. I love that comparison. Also, my only other one I've come up with so far is that Mike and Molly is Pharrell on the bench, because I know it exists, but I've never heard it, and then not immediately changed the channel upon discovering it. I only even know Pharrell on the bench because he comes on CBS Radio down here sometimes.
I don't think I've heard of either of those.
He's the guy that talks like this. And I don't like it. Mike and Molly has, I think it's Kevin James. No, it's not Kevin. No, that's something else. Oh, Kevin Can Wait. Oh, God. No, it's
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking
about. It's the woman who played
Melissa
Sean Spicer. Thank you.
And Billy Gardell.
I don't know. I don't have a clue.
I don't think I've
Billy
ever
Gardell
heard
is.
Of him outside of that context before.
But I've seen his face 1,000 times.
That's true. I have. Yes. As soon as I Wikipedia searched it, I was like, oh, I know what show you're talking about. I've just never watched it.
And that, right. And you've never listened to Pharrell on the Bench either.
I didn't even know it existed.
You didn't know Mike and Molly existed. It works. I'm telling you, it works. But I'm also looking for more nominees. So if you're listening right now, if you have
two broke girls equivalent?
At JB Briscoe, or if you want, 913-491-8255. 913-491-8255. Only if you have more nominees for sports talk radio shows that can be paired up with other forms of medium. This started off with Colin Cowherd being Dane Cook of radio, then it became Mike and Mike becoming the Big Bang Theory. Mike and Molly is Pharrell on the Bench, vice versa. 913-491-8255 if you have nominees, or at JB Briscoe. Two Broke Girls is a very good one, because that's pretty specific. And see, like, ESPN Radio has, like, the W or whatever. Or the trifecta. It's the trifecta. That's all women, but that's kind of unfair, because they're like, well, they both have girls or women in the title. That doesn't really...
We listen to lots of NBC Sports Radio just because we work here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like just picking up shows through osmosis. It's mm-hmm. like The Leisurman, maybe.
I don't even know who that is.
You haven't heard of The Leisurman over on A10 occasionally?
I don't think so.
They're on at about, like, 4 or whatever on Saturdays or whatever.
No, I don't think so.
It's not great, let me tell you.
I imagine it's
not great.
I imagine it's not great. Can Two Broke Girls maybe be the Stugatz, Mike Golic Jr. Sunday morning show? Pushing the boundaries of acceptable sluttiness? Charlie also just walked into the control room. I'm going to reset this segment.
Should
so
we send Charlie in
Charlie.
There with some headphones so that he can participate?
Do you
in this
have
as
headphones
well?
On you currently, Charlie? I don't think Charlie's going to have any nominees that are, because this is hard. I had to think about these, but I'm going to reset this. Let me just reset this for Charlie. So TJ earlier tweeted that Dane Cook is the UK. Have you heard everything up to this point already? We wait for Charlie to find the microphone.
Maybe not the last like 2 minutes, but
okay.
Yeah.
But you have the concept though, right? Okay. So and Mike Big Bang Theory, perfect. Mike and Molly for on the Bench, I think, works. But we're looking for more comparisons. So Beard said, what's Two Broke Girls? What's the radio equivalent of Two Broke Girls? What's the TV equivalent of the Lebatard Show? I actually have my best comparison is something I literally don't think I could say. I think I would get fired. I think it's too crass. But it was funny. Did you just turn off my... I thought Beard's going to turn off.
Come on, give it to me.
Very specific. Oh, mic back up. Okay. All right, Beard. You gotta warn me before that. I make a joke and then you turn my mic up while I'm mid joke. That's terrifying. He turned off my mic and made me tell him my joke. I love that game. So if you also are hearing this in the podcast, feel free throughout the week, man, if you've gotten this far into the show, throughout the week, just tweet me your suggestions. Also, somebody tweeted me a hilarious gif of Joe Flacco and said, remember that time you said you'd rather have Flacco than Alex Smith? Did I ever say that?
I think that was when you did... It was like before we did the Mahomes.
Yeah, it was like 18. I came up with like 18 quarterbacks. I don't think I took Flacco.
I think you did.
I might have had Flacco in that equal group. You want to play that game again, you guys?
I feel like it was either you had him over Smith or it was a tie. I think it was one of those two. I don't think you had Smith over Flacco.
I think I did. regardless, this is not where I thought the segment was going to go because it started such a weird place.
Charlie just came up. Is Nick Wright the equivalent of Two Broke Girls?
Oh, that's unfair. No, Nick Wright's a good question, though. He doesn't even have a radio show. He just has a TV show. But whenever he fills in for Cal, who fills in for Dane Cook whenever he gets sick?
What's the speak for yourself?
Oh, God.
TV equivalent.
Oh, God.
It's got to be like one of those crossover shows where it's like they just took two characters from one show and split them with characters from another show just to, you know, draw audiences.
Survivor. Did Sarah just say Survivor? They're like, oh my God, that's still on the radio and television. Also, by the way, I'm gonna make a case. I'm gonna go really off the board and say that Libertard show is Rick and Morty, which is like it's a weird, like sort of psychedelic like show that you think you have to be smart to get, but really the fan base is like slowly trying to ruin the show. That's not a terrible answer.
It's not a terrible answer.
It's not a terrible answer at all. And it's self-aware. Half of it is self-aware.
Right.
And half of the fan base of both of those shows is self-aware.
Well, I'm just talking about the show in general. Like, the show itself is self-aware that it's
a
show.
Oh, that's a good call. Right. Yes, the show, Levitard and Rick and Morty are both self-aware shows. But the fan base is, like, half self-aware and, like, half cannibalizing the product and, like, assaulting McDonald's employees. And then just screaming Pickle Rick at an unbelievable rate that makes you want to barf. Do you want to hear my spiciest hot take that I have? Oh no! What's going on behind the scenes?
I made apparently a blasphemous comment. I said Futurama is better than Rick and Morty.
I think I've heard that before. Futurama is like more well established. I never really watched Futurama. I saw all three seasons of Rick and Morty in like a 2 week span. But you want to hear my hottest, spiciest Rick and Morty take? Maybe my hottest, spiciest take in general. I didn't enjoy the Pickle Rick episode. And maybe it's because I already knew.
I enjoyed it.
Because the meme thing had gotten out ahead of it at that point. Like, I already knew about, like, a Pickle Rick garbage trash well before I saw the episode. Watching the episode after knowing that the meme existed made me sick of the episode, like, 2 minutes in. It was also, like, unrealistic to the point of getting unrealistic for Rick and Morty. And it bothered me. All right, now the logical next step. Let's rank quarterbacks. Oh, hey, get me that NFL music, would you please? Jay Lebatard show, Rick and Morty, we're good with. Mike and Mike, Big Bang Theory, we can work with. What other big radio shows are we not thinking of? Ryan Russillo.
Russillo show.
Russillo is...
It's got to be like the...
It's like CSI anything.
I was going to say it's like the duo show that then the one character got his own spin-off.
Oh, it's Two and a Half Men. It's Two and a Half Men. And Kennell was Charlie Sheen.
That's actually pretty good.
Actually, Russillo is the one that woke up naked in someone else's house, so maybe he's Charlie Sheen.
What's Olbermann when he was on the air?
Firefly. Canceled too soon.
That's a good one.
Yeah, you're damn right. It's a good one.
I mean, just from that premise, yes, but like the other points don't quite work together.
Disagree.
Canceled too soon, yes.
Disagree. I'm killing it out here.
Do you want the NFL music now?
Yes, I do. This is a sports show. Carson Palmer / Drew Stanton. No. Matt Ryan. I would take Matt Ryan over Alex Smith. Fight me. Joe Flacco. No. Tyrod Taylor's a push. Cam Newton. Yes. Bears. No. Dalton. Ha. Browns. Ha. Dak. Yes. Broncos. Ha. I would take Matt Stafford. Don't fight me. Aaron Rodgers. I'm still taking. He still counts. But he's not in the league currently because he's hurt. Deshaun Watson. For this year? No. I want Andrew Luck, but I think his arm's broken, so we're going to leave Andrew Luck out of this. Jaguars, no. Rivers, no, that one's definitely different. Jared Goff has been really good. Fight me. I'll take him. What is this voice I'm doing? Was this the front on the bench voice? Damn it. Dolphins, no. Vikings, I don't know who the quarterback is, so no. Patriots, yep. Saints, yep. Giants, no. Jets, no. Raiders, yep. Eagles, yep. Steelers, yes. Niners, no. TX, yes. Buccaneers, no. Titans, yes. Washington, yes. Can I get a drum roll, please?
I just put Alex with a 14. Are you content? Or 15. Out of 15. I had 14 quarterbacks ahead of Alex Smith still. Did any of those offend you? Good listeners? What was offensive? Charlie's nodding at me. Oh, you coward. Well, who did I have him tied with? Let's do it again! Don't, please don't actually. I had him tied with Tyrod Taylor, I just remembered. So even if having him ahead of Tyrod Taylor, put him at 15. Seriously, though, were any of those bad? I don't think any of those were biased, right? Like, everyone would rather have Matt Ryan. Everyone would rather have Cam Newton. Dak Prescott. Matt Stafford. Aaron Rodgers. I guess Jared Goff is questionable? Fine, leave Jared Goff out of this. Brady. Breeze. Carr. Wentz. Roethlisberger. Wilson. Mariota. Cousins.
This gives a lot more dignity to our NFL takes.
It really does. That's Alex Smith at 14, guys. Those are all guys you would definitely rather have than Alex Smith, right? God. Now let's do it all again with Patrick Mahomes. Gonna compare Patrick Mahomes to every other team's backup quarterback. God, do I know every team's backup quarterback?
Let's find out.
Let's find out! Cardinals has Drew Stanton and then Blaine Gabbert. I'm not doing this. Coming up next, we're going to break down every single offensive line in football. Also, hopefully compare more radio shows to bad CBS comedies. Next!
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I just told you there are 17 starting quarterbacks Stan I thought other have than Alex Smith.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Four guys who could go in the direction. You split that off. I just put Alex Smith at 20. Is that true? Did I just put Alex Smith at 20? Oh, God. My Twitter mentions are going to be a pain.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Alex Smith has moved up six spots this season in my quarterback power rankings. I think Andy would make a lot of quarterbacks look really good. I think of Tyrod Taylor. This is strangely enough, this is how Lepetard started today on the local hour, saying if you switch places of Tyrod Taylor and Alex Smith, like, wouldn't they be doing pretty much the same thing? Like, yeah, probably so. So I wasn't even counting Tyrod Taylor as equal. I was saying, guys, I take over Alex Smith. I think I got him up to 15. Which I know seems crazy because he's been so great this year. But he's got a really good offense around him. He's got really good weapons and a really good head coach. A really good offensive line, except for the last couple of games. That offensive line's coming back together this week. But I admit that, like, 15 seems really high. There are a lot of quarterbacks having worse seasons this year than Alex Smith is. I mean, he's probably in the conversation with, like, what, Brady, Wentz, Breeze, as the guys having the best quarter, maybe Kirk Cousins, as the guys having just really good seasons this year. I don't mean to change that perception. He's having one of the best quarterback seasons in football this year. But I'm saying, you know, if you're going to restart this season with a guy at quarterback for the Chiefs, whatever. I guess I'll take Cam Newton. Whatever, man. All right, there was some football. So now if you are listening to the football-only version of this podcast, you're also going to get some free NBA talk tapped on to the end. This show's free. It's a free show. If you don't
like shows sometimes.
The active budget for this show is like $12.
Actually, we are the budget. We're having to finance it ourselves.
I know.
We pay our own salary.
You've lost money on this show. That's not true. Don't lie to the people. But you've lost money this week because you bought a webcam. Is not streaming anything.
Nope.
But so before you
Gabrielle Union is on SportsCenter right now. And I don't even think we can talk about the reason that that's so interesting. I don't think we can even talk about the reason that she's on SportsCenter right now. I wish I had subtitles on or just the audio of SportsCenter right now, because I would be so interested in how they're talking about anything with Gabrielle Union right now. She was on Sway in the Morning. Feel free to Google Gabrielle Union, Sway in the Morning, and learn something intimate about her relationship with Dwayne Wade. Very, very, very intimate. Ah, she wrote a book. She's on a book tour.
Okay, so it's not in the vein of the Steph Curry, Ayesha Curry foot thing?
Have you not seen this story?
I don't think so.
Oh, beards! Yeah, it's very much in the same vein as the Ayesha Curry, Steph Curry foot thing.
Oh,
but it's
okay.
Worse.
Okay.
It's worse. It's harder to talk about on radio.
No, we can't talk about this on radio.
But I want to. You gotta look it up now. That joke was too good. That joke was too good not to look up.
I told you, this show sometimes shows that it's free.
Right, okay, yeah, so the point I was gonna get to before we accidentally talk about the Suns for 5 minutes until the show's over. The show is free. And so if you're listening to the... I really do try to make it as easy for the listeners as possible to just give them the Chiefs stuff on that Chiefs feed, on the Roughing the Kicker feed, if you just want the Chiefs talk. Today's show had a lot of stuff woven into other stuff, so I'm sorry if you hate it. I mean, there are a lot of Chiefs podcasts out there and everything. I want you to listen, and I want you to, you know, participate in the show and everything, but, like, whatever. The next 5 minutes are probably going to be about the Suns. So, because they're an interesting national story, and this is the first time in a very long time that the Suns have been a national story. It's not for the reasons that I would like for them to be a national story. It's just God's honest truth. Dang it, God. So, Suns GM Ryan McDonough said today that the Suns are now in reset mode. Which is apparently maybe a new thing for a team that hasn't won Jack in 5 years. At least we figured out earlier that Steve Nash was traded about five or six years ago. I guess before the 2012 or 2013 season. Can't remember. He was apparently super harsh on Eric Bledsoe for not being a leader, which, you know, I get it. But I'm also not going to crush Eric Bledsoe because this is an organization that's been in reset mode for 5 years and is just now apparently admitting it. So I don't hate what Eric Bledsoe did. I wish he would have done it in private so they could have gotten prime trade value out of him and not made it so obvious that he wants to leave. But here's where the Suns do have an advantage, though. They can just sit Eric Bledsoe for like a month and literally nothing will change. They just won't have the new piece yet. If they could have their way, they might just hold on to Eric Bledsoe and then trade him at the last possible moment to get the highest possible value. They don't care if they lose a bunch. They would prefer it, frankly. Now they're 1-2 also. Did the Warriors also start 1-2?
Yes. So, and then blew out the Mavericks last night.
But what you're saying is the Warriors and the Suns had the same start to the season.
I think the Suns started 0-3.
I don't think so. I think they did.
Yeah, because they had three losses, too.
Yeah, lost by 75 and then lost by 2 and then lost by, like, 74.
Yeah.
And then fired their coach.
Yep.
And then won a game. You're right.
Yep.
So what you're telling me is that the Suns only had a one-game worse start than the Warriors did. How many games do you think the Warriors are going to win this year?
66-plus.
All right, 65 or so for the Suns. That's exciting. Thank you for predicting that. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to Alex Lynn, All-Star. Damn it. Yeah, I don't know if we've had, and listen, calling Eric Bledsoe a star, I know, is very lenient as to your definition of
a star.
Good.
He's a good role player.
But he's a very good player, and especially in Phoenix, he's like the guy beyond Devin Booker, who you're just waiting for to become the actual guy. But I don't know if we've seen a player as good as Eric Bledsoe come up and just say, I don't want to be here in any sport in a while. I'm trying to think of who would be the last guy that would have done that. And I'm guessing, Kyrie.
I guess it makes sense.
Different way, different circumstances, but it kind
sure,
of
sure, very
thing.
Different. But a
basically
similar thing.
Trade request,
right? But the way that Bledsoe did it, and also in his specific situation, is interesting because we know why Eric Bledsoe doesn't want to play in Phoenix anymore. They benched him for a huge part of the end of last season because they just wanted to get back to losing. And he's on a terrible team that's doing nothing for them. Nothing for him, wasting his years. They're not going to win. I don't know how long Eric Bledsoe's contract. I think he has a full season after this one, I believe, which helps out the trade value. Anyway, they're not going to win anything this year or next year, obviously, other than maybe the draft lottery. And then next year is when the lottery reform kicks in, right? There's one more season of actual. So either way, the Suns are going to get screwed over by the lottery because that's what happens. The Bulls are going to win to get the first overall pick.
He is an unrestricted free agent 2019.
Okay, so obviously he's simply wasting his time in Phoenix. I get him going to the GM and saying, "Hey, man, I don't want to be here anymore." I get him tweeting it on Twitter, which is apparently also that he's said that what he meant was he was at the salon and tweeted, "I don't want to be here," about the salon.
And the GM just came out and flat said, "I don't believe him."
Which was amazing.
It was hilarious.
Also, he tweeted a while, I think after they won last night. And I mean, I think he must have just gotten like a really nice cut at the salon because that's all of his tweets. All of Eric Bledsoe's tweets have been about the salon, probably ever, right? I'm going to Eric Bledsoe's Twitter currently to see if we can identify. Oh, it was, 19 hours ago. He just tweeted, "Wow, great cut from the salon." On the morning of the 23rd, which was, I believe, the morning after Earl Watson, the coach, was fired, he tweeted, "Good morning." Must have been, I don't know, getting his...
Man, that sunrise in Arizona must be pretty.
Getting his nails done? Getting a nice foot massage or something? His tweet before, "I don't want to be here," was quote tweeting, "Ha!" to tweet, "Eric Bledsoe has been listed as questionable for tonight's game with a right ankle sprain." He tweeted, "Ha! Someone told him a great joke at the salon, and he just wanted to share it." He accidentally quote tweeted the thing. I'm sure that has nothing to do with it.
Let's keep it a little local here. Do you remember? So Josh Jackson,
yeah,
got fined $35,000 for making finger gun emotions.
If you ever say
the
sentence, "Let's keep it local,"
you.
If you ever say the phrase "Let's keep it local" here again, I'm gonna kill you. But go
Let's
ahead.
Let's keep it local.
All right, I'm gonna beat.
But
you
anyway,
the red vines I have.
The great humorous part about that apparently was he came out and said, "No, man, I didn't mean to give finger guns. I meant to flip him off."
I love Josh Jackson. I like. He also got fined $35,000. But Steph,
I mentioned that already.
But Steph Curry, did you actually? Damn it. Now I know how Charlie feels all the time. Ooh, I hate it. Steph Curry got fined, what was it, $50,000 and no suspension for throwing his mouthpiece at an official? Can you imagine if DeAndre Jordan did that? If DeMarcus Cousins threw his mouthpiece at an official, he would be banned from the NBA for 50 years. Not for life. They'd let him try to bring up a comeback 50 years from now. #HumbleSuperstarStephCurry. Threw his mouthpiece at a ref. And then apparently also, I don't remember what game this was in, but Kevin Durant was like flipping off the crowd like with his ring finger. Not to be like, "Here's a clean version of me flipping you off," but to say like, I got a ring.
I think that was the same game.
It was. Where was that
Memphis.
Game? Memphis. Okay. By the way, let's keep it local. Andrew Wiggins, looking like a big boy.
Game winner.
Up in Minnesota.
Called game, not bank.
Jimmy Butler's going to be good for Andrew Wiggins. That's also exciting for him to keep your eye on. I'd also take Andrew Wiggins at quarterback for the Chiefs over Alex Smith. I think that's what I said earlier. I can't even remember. Weird show. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.